Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, and welcome to another episode of Digging History. I am your host, Captain James McCormick from wild, wonderful West Virginia, and we got a heck of a show tonight. Now, last week, we had a good show talking about the Alberta 51st Statehood Movement, folks, okay? It's a movement, okay? And, oh, you know what? I think I just gave you all the it's digging. It's not digging history. It's continue mission. So I do a television show too. It's the West Virginia Library Channel. It's Digging History and Honoring the Sacrifice. And I was just watching the show that we had put out. And this show was on Gold Star Families. So let me just go ahead and back up Continue Mission, the radio show that hit over 150,000 people last week, with probably over 200,000 more that listened to the shows and shared it. We have become very popular up in Alberta, Canada. You want to know why? Because we love you and we want you to be part of America. We want all of you Albertans up there to sign that petition. Don't let the communist government take over up there. I'm telling you, we're going to talk a little bit about that as well, because there's some interesting things that are going on. But it's not just happening in Alberta, friends. It's happening in America, too. Washington State. You got Americans that are getting upset in California, New York. You know what I mean? You could take some of these states and create new states just because of the crazy, liberal mindset that has taken over these cities, and they have stolen freedom from the American people. You know, they look out and they see all these swaths of land. You know, I say that we should do that. You want to know why? Because it's going to force the liberals to do one of two things. They're either going to have to all coagulate in one cesspool of an area, or they're going to say, well, we're going to have to make it out here on the frontier and actually have to do something for a living. Either option's pretty good. You know, I don't dislike or detest people that are liberals. I don't. As a matter of fact, I love all people, because Christ tells us that we have to love people as we love ourselves. But I do not have to love the sin. As a matter of fact, there is several passages that tell us to not love and condone sin. And some of the things that you see are extremely sinful, extremely wrong. And on top of that, it goes against our U.S. Constitution. It goes against the full intent of the Founding Fathers. And it's time for it to end. A lot of things happening. A lot of things happening. Hey, the Supreme Court of the United States. Boy, they've got some people fired up, don't they? They fired up there right now. Every one of you guys in the military that is black or Hispanic or part of the quote-unquote movement that affirmative action supposedly protected you, you know, tell that to the Tuskegee Airmen, okay? Tell that to the 54th Massachusetts. Okay, in spite of all of that that didn't exist, they managed to be successful in what they did. Achieve high ranks, medals of honor, distinguished positions. You know, all those things. And they did it based on meritocracy. It's about your merit. Now, there's a lot of other stuff going on. Violence all over the country. All over the country. Violence. Parents are taking, especially, I'm just going to say it like it is, folks, a lot of white parents are taking their kids out of schools and homeschooling them. And you want to know why, public school systems, that you're going to lose your money? You want to know why? Because you can't control the dang violence that's going on in your schools. And you're allowing these gangs to rove and thugs to come through, and you're doing nothing. Back in my day, they'd grab a paddle and they'd wear your butt out with it. As my coach would say, well, let's just say my coach would say some colorful things. And what he would make sure that everyone understood is that there were rules, and you live by the rules. And if you were a football player and you got paddled, that was bad enough. But wait till practice, because you're going to run 45 extra wind sprints, or maybe even have to do 50-40s. That's 50-40-yard wind sprints. And don't be the last one to cross the line, or you're going to repeat it over and over and over again. We have coddled and we have made weaklings out of our youth. And we've allowed them, we've told them, don't fight back. Don't fight back, because if you fight back, you're going to get suspended too. My parents told me that if you go to school and somebody beats you up and you don't defend yourself, then I'm going to whip your hind end when you get home. So regardless of, I didn't care about getting suspended. You punch me, I'm punching you back. And if I can't get you with the punch, I'm going to get you after school. Okay? But then after it was over, it was over. That's because we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have idiots, you know what I mean, that don't have any control of their emotions. And you didn't have people running around saying, ha, 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 look at that. You know, this shaming mentality that these people have is most evil. That's purely of the devil. And I think Father Michael will be able to tell us about that as well. You know, people that feel like they got to grind it in your face all the time, you know. You know, that's not of God. That's of the devil, you know. And if you don't straighten up, you're going to go to hell, period. That's just the facts. It's just the way it is. You might not like what I have to say, and, you know, but it's the truth. And people say, well, how do you know that that's the truth? Because I believe in the Bible, man. And I'm telling you, I have been brought up with a reverent fear of God, man. And let me just tell you, I ain't worried about upsetting no man, woman, or beast. But I'm surely upset about disappointing God. And some of the things that we see happening out here is a pure, utter disappointment to our Father in heaven. Period. I don't proclaim to know what he's thinking, but I know by reading his word that he don't like what he's seeing. See, he don't like it when people walk up and just beat up old women and stuff. What's wrong with you daggone criminals, you thugs? That's why nobody wants to be around you. It has nothing to do with your race. It has everything to do with your stupidity. And when you get and you act like that, nobody wants to be around that. Okay, figure out why I can't get a job. Well, because you act like an idiot. And I'm watching all these videos, and, you know, I do a lot of hiring and a lot of consulting for companies that hire, and that's the first thing I do is I look and see if you got any of that nonsense BS on social media where you went around smacking on somebody or doing something. And if you do, we probably don't even look at your stuff. And why? Because we're looking for professionals, and that's not professional. People might say, well, that's discrimination. No, that's not discrimination. That's called smart hiring practices, having a third party do the background checks, and I love doing it. And you know what I love even more than that? Clowning these people and making sure that everybody knows that this is not a good hire. So there you go. Thank you very much. And what else do we got going on? So the Supreme Court of the United States, we're going to bring Rich and Father Michael on to talk a little bit about that. Affirmative action. Like I said, affirmative action has been struck down. Okay, and the first thing that comes out of everyone's mouth on the liberal side is that somehow that black Americans, and that's the only ones that they think's affected by this, somehow they can't make it now. They can't make it on merit, right? Is that what they're saying? Well, that's a bigoted thing to say, and that's a disrespectful thing for you to say, like I said earlier, about those Tuskegee Airmen and those members of the 54th Massachusetts and all those great pioneers of the past who rose up above all of that and was successful in spite of it. See, that's called meritocracy, friend. We all overcome things, don't we? But you guys want to make it to where it's somehow easier, and life has been made way too easier. That's why we got an obesity problem in America. That's why we got a problem where people don't even know their own sex. They can't determine, I don't know whether I'm a man or a woman. Look, next time you go to the bathroom, check it out, okay? And go pick up a biology book, a human anatomy book. It'll tell you what parts go where. It's ridiculous that we even have to have these discussions. Oh, and then we've got Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden, the great son of the great president himself, Hunter Biden, you know, probably has sniffed more coke, smoked more meth, and had more sex with prostitutes from Miami to New York City than anybody I've ever known, and walked away from it. And people wonder, why are we in such turmoil in this country? Why are we in such turmoil across this country is very, very simple. Because we have forgotten to honor God. We have forgotten what it's like to have a civil conversation, and we have zero respect for anything that represents authority. And I'm not talking about oppressive authority. That's not authority. That's a dictatorship. Big difference, folks. Big difference. No, what I'm talking about is I'm talking about authority that is there to protect you, that is there to ensure that we all follow the rules. And let me explain to this. Everybody's in turmoil now, right? They're all in turmoil now. Everybody, both sides, Democrats, Republicans, they're all whining. Tell me that I'm telling the truth. Well, Proverbs 29:2 tells us, when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. So y'all have elected a bunch of a wicked-ass people, and that's the reason why we have what we got going on here. So, a bad word. Father, forgive me. God, forgive me. But the truth of the matter is the truth of the matter. We have got to start electing good, godly leaders and stop this going up there and saying, well, I just have to close my eyes or pinch my nose and vote for this one. No, you don't. You go out and you study the candidates and you vote for the right one. And for God's sake, vote in the primary. And all you independents that are out there, I would advise you to vote. If you can vote for the Republican side, vote for the Republican side. Because you ain't going to find too many candidates on the other side. I mean, because they wouldn't be a candidate if they didn't represent the values of the current Democrat Party. And if you're a Democrat, I'm sorry. But you know what I mean? The same party that brought us the Civil War is now bringing us this woke the way that it is. Shocking, isn't it? Shocking. Hard to believe. That all those plantation owners that y'all been complaining about, well, they was all Democrats. Anyways, let's bring Father Mike on the line. Let's bring Rich Kilblain on the line, and let's get into this thing because we got some great guests coming in here today. Gentlemen, God bless you. Thank you for coming on the show, as always, and being my partners in good things. See, we're not partners in crime. We're partners in righteousness. That's why we have Continue Mission. That's why, I'm looking over here at this board over here, guys. It is lit up like a Christmas tree. So, you know, I watch these little tweaks, you know what I mean, goes up and down. People are listening. People are watching. Woo, we got a lot of Canadians on here. So let's do it right. So let's talk about it. What happened this week? What happened? What happened?
Can I raise the issue, and I'd like to – bring Rich into it, because when we talk about separation of powers and everybody saying it's not a normal court, as what the president said, and wrong decision, as if they can critique the other branch of government as if it has invalid or less authority, that's quite disturbing. If that's the Supreme Court. Now, they're not infallible. We know that historically they've made bad decisions, but there seems to be a lack of respect for the separation of powers and that whole, balance system that we have. And so, they've been trying to illegitimize the Supreme Court, and so these decisions are – there's an undercurrent as if – they're not a legitimate court. We need to expand the court. And if they're not legitimate, neither is the executive or the judicial. And that's ludicrous.
Mm. No, that's correct. That's probably very well said, okay? Because where we are in politics is it's my way or no way, okay? Everybody wants their way, and there's no room for compromise, okay? And so, yes, we now have a conservative Supreme Court, and so with a liberal administration, executive office, and so they're looking at the Supreme Court as being pretty much, well, not illegitimate, but not normal, okay? Very, very well said, all right? But because of two recent decisions. One, the end of affirmative action. All right. That lawsuit was brought out by Asian Americans. Asian Americans were being discriminated, right, because they worked hard to get their grades up, and then they would not get accepted to the prestigious schools because of affirmative action. It wasn't whites whining that affirmative action was unfair. It's Asian Americans that were whining about it, okay? The other one was it wasn't that we can discriminate against that alphabet group. No. You know, it was a lawsuit brought about by a woman who was asked by the LGBTQ community to make a website for their wedding, okay? She's not discriminating against them. She's discriminating against the message because Christianity sees homosexuality as an abomination to God. It's against the religion. Ask a Muslim to promote
right.
homosexuality.
And a violation
okay.
of their conscience.
Yeah.
A violation
so,
of our
so,
conscience.
Right. So you're mm-hmm. hearing the spin. The thing is, it's the message that what the Supreme Court ruled on is you cannot require some in the freedom of speech. First Amendment, they have the right to be silent. You can't force them to say something they don't believe in.
Right.
Now, discrimination is if a gay couple wanted you to build a website that had nothing to do with their anyone's religious beliefs, that would be discrimination, and that's illegal.
Right. That's
but if
right.
you, if a gay couple wants someone who's religious to build a website to promote their homosexuality and stuff, that's against their religion. That's against their freedom of speech. Okay?
Convictions, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So
yep.
so what you're
yep.
hearing out there is a spin. You know, yeah. As I heard someone else, you know, I was eager to listen to both sides of this discussion, especially the affirmative action. And one of the things pointed out is any conservative administration would applaud the Supreme Court decision by saying, all right, there was a time we needed affirmative action.
Right. Judge O'Connor
said
that.
And we're at a point mm-hmm. now where we really don't need it, okay? The problem is people need it because the public schools are failing them.
That's
it's
right.
not discrimination, all right? We've had affirmative action long enough that the colleges are not racist. But we have people, especially minorities in the inner cities, that are trapped in failing public school systems that the liberals demand you go to. And keep in mind, the liberal leaders that are forcing your kids to go to public schools, look where their kids go to schools. Do
yeah,
they go to public
really.
Schools? No, they're going to private schools, okay? And there's only one party that advocates school choice. They let the parents decide where their kids want to go to school and send the money there.
That's right.
Okay? So
and that's
the
where,
reason,
Rich, that,
the
that's
reason we have
point.
This need for affirmative action, you know, this residual law from, you know, the 60s is because now today public schools are failing the minority.
And I've seen it in the classroom, Rich, and truly they have to start preparing for college in sixth grade. I have a friend that was a JAG, African-American. He did a degree at Harvard with me in ethics. And he said, I started preparing for college and law school in sixth grade. But like you just said, if you have a failing school, you don't have a chance. They always talk about
yeah.
choice,
hey,
my body,
that,
my choice.
But we have people saying math is racist. Because it disqualifies them for these schools. Math
yeah.
is a universal language, okay? We use math
right.
to try to communicate with with alien intelligence, okay? And they say the English language is racist. So we need to acknowledge ebonics. In other words, you can't read and write and speak in the national language, okay? So let's make allowances for them. Who else reads ebonics? You're not setting – anybody that advocates this stuff is advocating failure.
And provincial success, because if you don't have a standard where you can be national, international, and universal, you can't compete on the world stage. So you're just
provincial. So what we're
in the ghetto.
Where we are with affirmative action and wokeness is advocating mediocrity,
right?
Not meritocracy.
That's right.
The Supreme Court ruling is a ruling for meritocracy, which the SATs and the ATCs were all created for in the first place. Okay.
And now they're trying to do away with some of those recommendations or those qualifications. And
because the public schools are failing.
That's right. That's right. Now, certainly a student is well-rounded. I want to know, about, the community involvement. I want to know what kind of a person they are, because they could have cheated through on just an academic. You were stating earlier, Rich, maybe you could reiterate the criteria for West Point, the different facets.
All right.
Like how they count.
Yeah, that's a good segue for it. If you listen to Biden's speech, he said military. What he really meant was service academies. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court ruling in abolishing affirmative action excluded the service academies from that. Why?
Mm-hmm.
I shared with you guys an article that the service academies have always been proponents of affirmative action, even before the law. Before that became law. And here's the reason why. You've got to look, the service academies, West Point, Naval Annapolis, and Air Force Academy, the Coast Guard Academy, they all look at the end product. They want to produce an officer, West Point soldier leader that reflects the soldiers they lead. Okay, I'll tell you right now. You're not going to find a lot of successful Harvard and Yale Army officers, okay? They rarely identify with their
existence. I got top locked as a Harvard graduate.
Yeah, but you're different. You came from the ranks. Yeah, look, Patella, you're like me. You're like me, and I'll get to that when we talk about affirmative action, the enlisted scum. Okay, so what the service academies advocate is that the officer corps has to reflect the ranks that they are leading, okay? So they need a certain percentage of African American officers. They need a certain
percentage. But in infantry, Rich, I did the research because we had and there is a lack of retention because a lot of African Americans were using the military as a stepping stone, but they were trying to put up generals.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, okay, Remo Butler, the first
I know who he is. Yep.
Yeah, I did too. That guy, my wife worked for his wife. Well, him and I, when we were we were both captains in seventh group at the same time. And
he was Brigadier when I knew.
Always loved to pull my chain. He had a great sense of humor. He loved fucking with me, okay? But anyway, great guy. But anyway, he wrote a paper when he was at the War College about that exposed that when you look at the percentage of African Americans serving in the Army and the percentage that are officers, and then you look at the percentage of African Americans become general officers, it's low. Okay? All right. And now I think what we find is the percentage of African Americans serving in the Army is higher than the national percentage.
Yes, that's
okay.
In the
so
Army.
You,
that's
what you
right.
find is a lot of African Americans are enlisting in the Army or going in as officers to get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Kudos. As I text you guys, you know, it was a wise sergeant that explained to me one time that the only color in the Army is green and the only race is the 2 mile run. So you forget all this other stuff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And all of us will admit it, that we don't have black brothers and Hispanic brothers. We have brothers. All our brothers in arms are brothers. We do not look at their race, okay? Their color, their ethnicity, whatever their sexual preference is.
And the brothers.
If we serve together, we don't care about that, okay? Now with the academies, the general officers. So because of this paper, there was a study done. They went and investigated. You want to know what they found? Why there is the number of African American general officers is lower than the percentage that represents the Army? Because the majority of them went into the support branches, in
That's
particular
right.
logistics. Mm-hmm. And as you said, they go into logistics because they know it prepares them for better jobs on the outside.
That's right.
Look,
that's exactly right.
You work at Fort Lee, now Fort Gregg Adams. Okay, I'm going to call it Fort Woke, all right, because, I mean, there's great logisticians we could have named at Fort. And Greg and Adams are, you know, they were great, but they're low-ranking people. I mean, they're not movers and shakers. But anyway, my point is, okay, you go there, I would tell you there's a higher percentage of African Americans on that fort than any other base in the Army. Why? Because a lot of African Americans gravitated to logistics because there's a lot more job opportunities for logisticians than there are for trigger pullers. And all my SF friends can talk about that, and infantry officer can talk about that, because it's like, oh, so how does killing people translate to business? But logistics does, okay? And they get out. So what they found is the Army isn't inherently systemic racist, as Biden would
mm-hmm.
have you believe. No, it's career choices that the African Americans have made in the officer corps.
Research is
right?
showing that. That's
but
right.
but keep in mind, you know, the first guy in my class to pin
mm-hmm.
on stars was African American. Okay. And, you know, we've produced a number of great African-American leaders. But anyway.
Was that Brooks? Was that Brooks? General Brooks?
Leo Brooks. That's right.
Yeah. We knew him at Bragg. And then, of course, one of the Brooks brothers was the commander in Korea. There's two. One
they're like a year apart. I get confused.
Yes.
Leo's
mm-hmm.
my classmate, so I, you know, when you keep hearing that he pinned on the star and went to become the commandant of West Point. Okay. Yeah. So
good stuff.
He's a good man. He was a son of a career officer. I don't remember what his father's rank was. But the Brooks brothers, man, they were squared away. They were squared away.
Been in
exactly.
home.
And they earned that on merit. And those people that are saying that they couldn't have made it without affirmative action, I think that should be insulting to those fine officers.
Well,
especially
hold it. But let's get to the service academies. Okay, so being an officer requires a lot more than grades, okay? You don't want an egghead as an officer, all right? So when I applied, I got turned down when I was at high school. I enlisted, and I came in through the ranks. And we'll talk about that as affirmative action. But they look at it on the whole man concept, and they weigh your background, and they put They look, 60% of the decision process is based on your grades, okay? And why grades? Because you got to work hard to get good grades. I goofed off. I'm seriously. I was lazy. It wasn't. I got into high school ROTC my junior year, and that motivated me. But I'd already had poor study habits. That's my fault. That's not the school's fault. That's my fault, okay? Because I didn't care to go to college. I was going to enlist in the Army as a private, but I got the high school ROTC motivated me. Already had bad habits. Okay. So, and then 30% at athletics, because you don't want an egghead leading, maybe in the logistics side, there's something, the military intelligence or something like that, but the vast majority of the Army is combat arms, all right? And yeah, you're going to need a lot of athletic guys. You know, what is, one of the quotes we had to memorize, I need a man for a dangerous mission. Give me a West Point football player, okay? I'm going to say, what about the boxers, okay? And then 10% leadership. So it looks at the whole man concept, right? But really what they look at, they're trying to look at the administrative admissions department. It's trying to look into your soul, because when I got admitted, I think they admitted like 1,500. We graduated 923, I think. We're talking about one-third of the people who get admitted are going to quit or get washed out for various reasons. See, unlike a lot of the other schools, West Point is designed to weed you out, okay? And we want to get rid of the weak. We're looking to produce soldier leaders, yep, people who are going to lead and inspire men and women in combat, in adverse situations, all right? And so they're really – and I will tell you, okay, so
got to roll.
I was on Okinawa. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, we got to roll, guys. We got all right. A guest on that. Our guest has called in, and we wanted to cover down on some of these basic fundamental things that have just started out. But today, tonight, we have a special guest, Greg Meekin, and he is a key player in the Alberta 51st Statehood Movement. And also we have another guest calling in. His name is Benjamin Ebel, and he is also well-versed in the movement of statehood for the Canadian province of Alberta. And also we need to have a discussion on the separatist movements going on in Washington, California, and New York. And we are looking at the face of liberty right now. And I'm telling you, I'm really excited to have Greg on the show. Greg, let me tell you, we've got friends out there, buddy, that share this show. And I'm going to go to our Twitter site here, which Val Olson, let me do a little bit of shout out to you, Miss Val. Hey, God bless you for sharing that. And you're right. It says here, Greg Meekin, 2020 Media Tour is on the radio tonight, and I'm listening on Continue Mission. Alberta is the talk of the world, James McCormick. Right now, I'm getting these messages in. There was another message that just came in as well. Let me look and see here, folks. This is huge. This is big. This is absolutely amazing. It says, wakey, wakey, Alberta politicians. This is what the free world is covering and happening in your backyard. Pull up a chair and listen to Continue Mission. And we agree with you, Val, and all you Canadians that are out there. You want to become a state. We are here talking about it. We're going to give you a platform. And Greg, my friend, my brother, a fellow old-timer like myself, what's going on, man?
I'll tell you what, James, you guys are on fire tonight. You guys are on fire tonight. I love being on a radio show where I'm with a bunch of fellow old guys. It's great. What you're describing, all of you gentlemen, before I forget here, I got to take a minute. I got to salute all you guys, okay? I thank you very, very much, James, for the cordial invitation. But I want to salute you guys. both you and Rich and the rest. And I want to salute everybody in your audience, every single one of them, you know who you are, who served in the military or supported, goodness gracious, the military, like our wives and daughters. And I want to salute everybody out there today, because I'll tell you what, I'm not sitting here on the talking with you gentlemen on the radio tonight without our military protecting us every single day. So shout out to you guys, and I really mean it. We love you. And I can't, I'm so surprised. What a fun introduction here, James. You got me pumped. You got me pumped. 2 years ago, I started an epiphany from God. I'll tell you what, there's an exclusive. The Alberta is going to be the 51st state of the United States of America.
It was 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. What's the problem? What's the solution? And so literally 1 year ago, I launched a true AB51 kind of website. It turned into a referendum, and it's AB51vote.com. AB51vote.com. And oddly, coincidentally, James, this is the last day of voting, June 30th, midnight tonight. It's past my bedtime already, but I want to tell everybody before we get, there's so much to talk about. My military background goes back to the 1600s. I forgot that till doing my research this week for you guys. But I want to tell you, two years ago, I listened to Alberta people. There's some disenfranchised, really, really frustrated people in Alberta. They don't know how to get out. So AB51vote.com, I said, okay, let's ask a question. Here we go. Do you want to be the 51st state of the United States of America? Yes, no, or undecided. And we started votes in February, and I announced the votes today on Val Olson's show. She broke it. And then subsequently, I was on American Up Radio with my dear, dear friend, Pastor Mike Phillip. Dear friend, Pastor Mike Phillip. I've been on 39 shows with just Mike Phillip alone in this last year. And I want to tell you right now, I can say it right now here, tonight, June 30th, 2023. I'm going to tell you right now. Alberta 51 yes votes. Alberta 51 yes, James. We have a 700,000 yes vote head start right now as we speak. I closed the polls earlier today. 698,035 from 136 Alberta cities. So it's province-wide. So thank you for having me on. Where do we go from here? But I'll tell you where Alberta needs to go from here. We're waiting for it right now in the United States of America.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, let me tell you something. The American people are waking up, and they're hearing this going, what the heck is going on? You know, I want to give, you know, Fox News broke this story. And you know, of course, the liberals are just attacking it, man. They hate anything that represents.
Oh yeah.
I don't even call them liberals anymore. I mean, they're communists and socialists, and they hate anything that represents freedom or the people's desire to become independent and free. And that's what you all are trying to do. You're trying to become independent and free because you want to live under the United States Constitution. And I can tell you there's some history between between Alberta and the United States. And I'm going to give you an opportunity to talk about that.
Well,
first, I got to say something. So I'm on your website here, brother. GregMeekin.com. That's GregMeekin.com. I got to spell it, you know, and I'm a hillbilly from West Virginia, so I spelled it extra slow, okay, for myself. What's going on with these hockey shirts, dude? I want one. How much does it cost? How do we get it? I want a hockey shirt.
You noticed the jersey, right? You know, by the way, it's called a hockey jersey in Alberta. It's a hockey sweater in Montreal. That's where I'm from.
Okay.
And if I have, and this is a personal thing, this is a business thing, if I launch a big business, which I've done in the past, I built a $5 million ice arena in the Seattle area so my kids could have access to play hockey. It's still there, 20 years before the Seattle Kraken. What I do for some for big events, you know, military guys, you put on your medals, right?
Right.
I craft hockey jerseys to celebrate. When I opened Bremerton Ice Arena in Seattle, we had beautiful jerseys. Guess what? One was in the hands of Wayne Gretzky, Jean Beliveau, Apollo Ono, et cetera, as a tribute. Now, with the AV 51 and also managing the internal poll here, the voter roll, I'm saying I think it's going to happen, so why don't we celebrate right now? July 1st, I've officially declared Alberta 51 Independence Day. Blue Angels flyover video on my YouTube channel because Canada canceled Canada Day last year. Do you remember that? With the planes, snowbirds, they didn't want them to fly over Ottawa to celebrate July 1st. So the United States is happy to oblige. We'll take it, July 1st. So the jerseys came out. They were I designed an Alberta 51 hockey jersey, commemorative hockey jersey. It's authentic. It has your beautiful name on the back. It's got a tail tag on it that says Alberta USA. And on the front is I almost get emotional about it. The front, the crest, the Alberta 51 crest, hockey crest, was designed by my artist son, Carson Meekin, in Seattle, Washington State. We did two full radio shows last week just on the crest and the hidden meanings of the crest. So that's the jersey. The first one I presented done was to Sheriff Mark Lamb 2 days ago. He loves it. Alberta 50. Sheriff Mark Lamb, he's the badass of all time, okay? He's the badass
he
of all time.
He is super bad dude, man. So, I mean, he's an awesome dude.
Oh, yeah. So I designed the jerseys, and here's what we did. I talked a lot to people up there. I wanted to make them available, just commemorative. And it's $299 U.S. Mm-hmm. with free shipping, whether it's the U.S. or Canada, free shipping. $299 free shipping. These custom jerseys now, James, people are paying $400 or $500 for them now. But $299 U.S. And I want to tell you, look on my YouTube channel. There's videos already of people that got them. Mike Phillips up in Edmonton, our wonderful American radio friend, he got it. He did a whole show on it. He was just prancing around the radio studio with his 51 jersey on. Because it's number 51, by the way, right, James? That's a marketing coincidence right there. So if anyone out there, seriously, I mean this too. I know everybody in the world is asking for money, donations, all this stuff. I'm not. But I will tell you what, and I mean this too. I really wanted to make a fun, positive way. If you participate and buy a jersey, you will just make me the humblest, happiest guy in the world because we're really just trying to whittle down at some of these big IT costs in this last year and stuff, seriously.
Oh, look,
you know
man,
how it goes. You know how it goes. So
I won't
just thank
even,
you for
I won't
that
even
shout
blink
out.
At $300, man.
I want to send one. I want to go to the post office, and once I see, of course, that your credit card's valid, James, I'd like to drop one in the mail to you, to West Virginia. There's one state that we have not sent a jersey to, and that's West Virginia. So
well,
I honestly, and I mean this is from the heart. I thank you. I thank you for that. Really, that's a plug, but that's from the heart. I really, really appreciate it, and I appreciate you bringing it up, especially so early. And I want to tell you, people are going nuts over these jerseys and the crest. I think there's two dozen videos on my YouTube channel just about the crest with my son Carson. So there you go. There you go. Boy, this is a fun show tonight, guys. This is past my bedtime, but I'm having fun.
So let me tell you something about, you know, the cost. So it's like $300, right? But these custom jerseys, especially a hockey jersey, okay?
Right.
And the custom logo that's on the front, even if you cannot go into the store and buy a custom jersey, football jersey, baseball jersey with your name on the back and all of these things, I'm telling you, you're going to spend that for these. So let's not, I mean, listen, folks that are out there listening, I know some of you don't have, you know, a whole lot of money. But set aside a little bit of that cash, but understand you're going to be helping to push that independence movement for Alberta as well and deliver this great message, okay, and wear it with pride. And imagine when they become the 51st state of the United States of America, it's going to be awesome. You're going to be one of the first kids on the block that has one of those jerseys, so go get it. So, Greg,
and, you know, James, you bring that up, and I've had folks that say $300 is a lot of money, but families are doing it. Siblings maybe buy a Christmas gift for their dad or granddad and stuff. So there's lots of passion going out there, and I think it's just going to be great. And as you say, it's the mission, man. It's the 8051 mission, period, that it's all about.
Yeah, go pick up some cans, folks, and start recycling. You'll be able to set the money aside fairly quickly. Anyways, Greg, let's go into this independence movement here, the movement for statehood.
Sir.
You know,
right.
I am just blown away by the number of Albertans that voted for statehood. I'm just, look, you know, the fact that you got that many people to vote, you know, in America,
yes.
We're lucky to get, and I don't know what the average is now, somewhere between 30-40% of the registered voters will vote, you know.
Right.
On an off year, it's even lower. But the fact that you've got, how many citizens do you have in the Alberta area?
The beauty here, James, is I tell you what, down here in Arizona, we're burned out on loser elections. We still don't know the total number from Maricopa County. And so what I wanted to do I'll tell you, it's crazy, but when I implemented this voting poll, I said, here's all I want to do. This is all I want to do. I'm so burned out on loser politics, James. Anyhow, here's what I want to do. I want to make sure that these are Alberta-eligible residents. They're 18 years and older. That they can actually, imagine this, James, happy to provide valid ID to prove their eligibility, that they're an actual person. They're not a person. They didn't come out of ballot harvesting or magical ballots that turn out. I know, and I'll tell you what, I'm really proud of this. There were 698,000. I know where every single one of those voters is, and I know that they're real people. And I'll tell you what, here's the big secret. I learned so much running this poll internally. I'm a different person right now after talking to so many Albertans. But the inside scoop here is there's at least a couple hundred thousand of this number, James, that have never voted before or would never consider voting because they don't like Canada, Justin Trudeau, Ottawa. They have lost hope. They don't even think about voting. But I documented them. So if anything, if we can somehow get back to this, I call it 1950s handshake world, where there's common sense, there's normal. People who vote are people. So if anything, and if I would have told you this morning, I tallied up the numbers this morning. There are about 15, 6, I don't know the number, but number of groups and parties and stuff that voted. And I fell off my chair when it was almost 700,000.
Oh, wow.
I fell off my chair. But the joy I have, they're real people, James. I talked to so many people. I talked to retired couples, people. So many people have given up hope, but they're still hanging in with the American dream. I feel, James, that not just my Alberta poll, but the other movements you're talking about, the groundswell in Alberta, I think not only is this real, I think that this is just a desire to get back to 1950s handshake business, handshake world, common sense, education. I've written extensively my books about education, how to fix it. The money follows the students. In healthcare, the money follows the patient, fixes. So I want to tell you, I do believe that this new movement is going to be successful this time around. And what people don't know, James, nobody knows this. So few people know this. The founding fathers of the United States of America, these were smart guys, okay, really smart guys. Let's toss out the nonsense and the BS that we're hearing about them now. These are smart guys, and they, from the very beginning, they knew that they were wrestling with the British over this place called Canada. And they made sure, during the transition, call it 1776, they made an open invitation to any Canadian province, they called it a province at the time, to rejoin the United States. And that, to this moment, remains in the founding documents. And that is why the U.S. Senate is quietly talking about this, because this really might even be a foundational responsibility of America to welcome Alberta back. So it can happen. I believe, I have always believed it's going to start on the U.S. Senate, the U.S. side, the U.S. Senate, extending an invitation for Alberta to rejoin the Union and the Family of Freedom. So there you go.
All right. As the residential historian, I can confirm what you just said, okay?
Hallelujah.
In fact, Benedict Arnold and Montgomery led an invasion. And it wasn't so much an invasion. It was an invasion to defeat the British, Quebec, but it was – but they did not want to antagonize the Canadians, because what they wanted was Canada, which at that time was just Quebec, to become the 13th colony of you know, what would become the United States of America in a declaration of independence against England. Yes, this is rooted in our American Revolutionary War. What's funny is, well, you know, that while Canadians were ambivalent about it, but it is what I'm hearing is, like, Alberta. Okay. What the hell is the population density of Alberta as compared to the rest of Canada?
Right. Alberta is twin to Arizona down here, 4.5 million people. Canada's run is run by two provinces, Quebec and Ontario. You know that. I grew up in Montreal.
Well, what we basically
Quebec.
Have in
oh,
America,
yeah.
What we have in America is the high-density cities. If,
yep.
if you look at the voting demographics, all the major population areas, which are primarily along the coastlines and around Chicago and stuff, they vote blue. They vote liberals, okay? The vast majority of America, when you look at a map, the vast majority of America is red, votes conservative, okay? Now, when you get in a debate with the liberals, they're saying like, well, yeah, but these are sparsely populated areas. Their vote doesn't count. Farmers don't count. Rural people do not contribute. How long is your life going to live without the rest of the country, okay? So what I see is, and I'm trying to bring out the, you know, because I love rebels, and I'm trying to play the devil's advocate. He said, and look, the worst thing I can say about your movement is it will really fuck up the shape of the American map, okay? Seriously, have you even thought that through? Has anyone, like, imagined what adding Alberta to the American map would do? But, hey,
yeah.
We got Alaska, okay?
Well,
so, in other words, to make it look clean, you're going to to add the Westerns. Go ahead.
His call got dropped. He just called back in. So we're bringing Greg on. We also have got on the line Benjamin Ebel, and that's EBLE.
All right. Well, let me answer what he
Greg
would have said.
Hold on a second. I'm pulling Greg back on right now. Greg,
right.
We got you now.
I'm here right now. Yeah.
Okay, we got you, brother.
Yeah,
we got you.
It's like a Navy SEAL team coming out to help me out. There's these guys. Yeah, right. Here we go. Greg's in trouble in Arizona City, Arizona.
Okay.
My calls drop all the time. I thought maybe Justin Trudeau had something to do with it. You know, maybe I'm getting in the way. You know, how about Joe Biden? Hey, Joe, you're dropping my calls, man. So here we go. We're back to the races, guys. Go ahead.
Well, I guess what I was getting at is basically what we have is the urban elitists consider themselves highly educated, okay, trying to tell the rural America and, in your case, rural Canada. So when you look at what and based on my research, the population density of Alberta, it's very sparse. It's very sparse, okay? So the majority of the population is going to live in the major cities closer to the St. Lawrence River, and they're going to say, your vote doesn't count, okay? But what do you contribute to the economy of the rest of Canada.
Yep. You're talking about the BC, the Republican.
You have one-third of the oil being produced in the
correct
world, right? Something
yep
like that?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep. One-third of the oil reserves, yep, in the world, just behind, I think, Saudi Arabia. Oh, yeah.
See, the thing is, so the urban elite are trying to say, because you're sparsely populated, your vote doesn't count, but we want your resources.
Yep.
That's the same debate going on in America.
Let me interject here. So, and I, just for anyone listening, I'm an American, but I'm also the founder of the Alberta USA Statehood Movement of 2019. So, but anyway.
Hey, Benjamin, could you do a quick intro of who you are and just give us your name and then right into it.
Okay, my name is Benjamin Ebley. I'm a regular cradle American. So I was born into something that I never really had the ability to appreciate until I learned about Canada and Alberta. And so there is the element of, and my background is in Mexico. I was trained by Mexican government lawyers starting in 2010. to help expats resolve problems with real estate fraud, because sometimes they would end up waywarded off the road. So I did that as charity, helping people, Americans and Canadians, save their properties and get their titles. And the community, Chanchamayo, where I live, is like 50% American, 50% Canadian, or a little more Canadian. And during the years that I help people save their properties and get their titles, one of the things that I ran into that was the precursor, I think, for everything that came later, is that if I were to explain to a Mexican in Spanish what his problem is and how to fix it with regard to, let's say, his title or his property, he jumps on it and fixes the problem. And if I were to show an American the same thing, many American people, they understand that they have to fix their problem, okay? But when I would explain the same thing to people from Canada, whether it's Ontario, BC, whatever, many, many, many times, they would get a deer in the headlights look. Then they would ask me, well, why doesn't the government? And I used to explain till I was blue in my face. Like, the government didn't create your problem. You're off the trail. You got to get back on. And so many of these Canadians, their outlook was as though the government should fly a helicopter to their cabin by the lake or whatever and knock on the door with papers in hand and say, sir, you have it. And I used to tell them, but I never could get through. And I didn't understand why. And one day I was thinking about this whole issue, because if I couldn't convince that person that they have to take these steps to fix their problem and get their title, it could be a total lost cause. So one day I was thinking about this and I thought, if they really believe that the government, especially here in Mexico, functions in that manner, then Canada must be a utopia, and I never knew. My next thought was, I have to find a way to get through to these people. So one day I was explaining an issue with a guy, a friend, a neighbor from Ontario, and he got the deer in the headlights look, and he said, well, why doesn't the government? And I looked at him, and I said, I made the most angry face I could make, and I said, here in Mexico, the government is not going to come and wipe your butt.
Yeah,
and I could see that it actually registered. And every time I was in that situation with a Canadian person, I was trying to help them. I would take three steps back and basically shout in an angry manner those words until so that it would register. And so in 2019, by 2019, I could not understand or decipher something that seemed peculiar between my neighbors. My neighbors, I have neighbors from Ontario, from Quebec, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Yukon, Alberta, British Columbia, Nova Scotia, maybe everywhere but maybe New Brunswick. And yet, when I would talk with my Canadian neighbors, I could see that they could not understand each other. So, for example, the people from Alberta could feel very angry, and the people from Ontario, they just seem to have no idea why. Like, it's not registering in their mind why. We can't even understand why the people in Alberta think there's a problem. Well, the government is feeding different things, ideas, news, whatever, in different parts of the country. This has been going on for a long time. So in some ways, the people of provinces are being pitted against each other. But I couldn't understand why. And it really came to a head when a neighbor from Alberta was ranting and raving on Facebook and probably saying things that were illegal about this guy named Justin Trudeau when he was reelected in the fall of 2019. So I thought, huh, I wonder who this Trudeau guy is. And I wonder why my neighbor's so upset with this guy. When I began to search, I found a group called Wexit, founded by Peter Downing, with maybe 35,000 members. And a week later, it was 100,000. A week after that, it was 250,000. They all were angry like my neighbor. So I began to read the commentary of the people. And I thought to myself, these are all the complaints, every single complaint that we had against Great Britain that led to our revolution. But how is this possible? We're in the 21st century. This stuff got fixed in the 1700s. Well, I was wrong. It didn't get fixed. We fixed it for us. But the colonial monarchical form of government has continued in British North America. And basically what has happened is that the central government was created, and then it began to seize other parts of Canada, like Manitoba, Alberta, Saskatchewan, many parts of Canada, literally by force, by like armies in the whole nine yards. We don't hear about that part. And so their country was created through force. And the way that the British design of government was brought in, getting back to, you know, the urban versus the rural, in this case, actually, the areas that you mentioned with population, they automatically get high representation. But the other areas, it's set in writing. So it's not really even about the population. It's about, that's how it was set up. And so those areas, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, never joined by consent. So it's the flip opposite of being an American state. It's the total opposite. It's really a matter of subjugation. So when I understood, I wrote, well, first I didn't really, you know, I had a gnawing sense for probably 2 weeks, something unresolved. And one day, I think I was walking into my bedroom or something, and it just struck. Join the U.S. We'll fix every single problem they have. Then I thought, that's crazy. No one's ever thought of that before. Well, I was wrong. This has come up throughout history since America was founded. It is part of our history, too. So I found a friend in Calgary who is an industrial magnate, and I told him, I said, maybe I'm crazy. This is what I think. And I gave the idea, and he said, you're not crazy at all. People believe that their entire lives here. You're not crazy at all. So the first time I wrote something as an American in support of Albertans joining the U.S., it went viral. And every time I wrote, it went viral. So they said, please help make this group. And I said, I can't. I'm American. But after several times, you know, I just remembered, like, their suicide rate spiking and tied to all the layoffs because of government policy. And I thought, well, I can't say no anymore. So we started a group with two people, and then we grew to 2,500, just a Facebook group. And then we grew to, like, 5,000. only grew to 10,000. But during that time, Canadian political operatives were constantly working either to try to destroy the group or to hijack the group. And that was a very rude awakening to see how much control people of their system, donors, big money donors, people who are working as political party actors, what they will do to try to gain control or try to destroy. It was mind-blowing. So that's how I ended up making the Alberta SA Stated Movement Facebook group, which is open to the whole world. It's also bi-national, of course, and I think we have about 10,000 members, and that's my background. So going back to the part about rural versus the elite and the population, it's really much worse than that, because it's actually, even if you change the populations, these things are set in the way the country was designed. And this goes back to the beginning, and it's really hard as an American, as an outsider who has never shown, to understand internally how different it is in the U.S. and why, if you brought this system into the U.S., we would just say, give it a trial, lock it up, throw away the key. So much of the system would be absolutely criminal. For example, the fusion of the executive and legislative branch. In the U.S., this would be criminal, because the founders recognized you have to separate these powers, and if you don't, you'll have a tyranny. So we're seeing a case of a nation with one part of it perpetually an indentured servant to the other part.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you have to educate the Canadians in Alberta that the government is not your friend.
Well, how do you tell them that?
No, it seems like that is your main message. What you just described is a cultural aspect I did not know existed in Canada. The American culture is a culture of rebellion, which is now, you know, when the liberal movement in 1775 was give me liberty or give me death. I may not agree with what you say, but I will defend until death your right to say it. Today it is, if I don't agree with what you say, you can't say it, okay? And that's liberalism, which it's not.
Yeah.
That's not the original definition of liberalism, okay? But I would say, yeah, so we have a culture of rebellion in this country. Telling me is Canada has a culture of conformism.
The way we describe it that I think Canadians can understand is that they have, it's a constitutional monarchy, they have a top-down form of government. And because we became a republic, we created a constitutional republic in 1781 and 1700s after the Articles of Confederation. Being a republic means it's a representative form of government. But we're actually a collection of republics, because every state is a self-governing republic. And so when the United States was formed, it was formed by people who used to be British loyalists, who used to be white Canadians. What did they do? They altered their colonial charters into constitutions. And during the Revolution, they restored the power and the maximum representation to the people, and they removed the power from the governor or the premier. So if you're an American and you ever start to look at a premier in Canada, he manages health care. He's the god of health care. He manages the economy. If you're an American, you would just think, there's no way. Yeah, that's how they're operating. But the thing is, we used to be like that until we changed our system by changing our colonial charters into constitutions to give the people the most representation, to create term limits, to reduce the power of the governor or the premier, basically to make him very weak. So we have a bottom-up form of government. And one of the things that I learned is that this is designed for citizens who are thinking to say, we got to get together. We need to get everybody behind our idea, and we need to get behind the representative, and we need to make him follow through. And he's going to have a term limit, too. So our representative, representational form of government, it's designed for that to work. But in Canada, the prime minister, his position is not limited. It's not defined. It's not even mentioned in any Canadian constitutional document. So there is no limit. There's no independent judiciary. So we have an independent judiciary, so the Supreme Court can say, no, Biden, you're not following the Constitution. Well, in Canada, first of all, the executive and legislative are fused into one branch. And then the Supreme Court is appointed by whoever Prime Minister wants, and they're basically rubber stampers. So here's the difference between the U.S. and Canada. In Canada, the Prime Minister can say, there's going to be a carbon tax everybody's going to pay. Why? Because he's a prime minister. He wields monarchical power. The people who are elected wield monarchical power. But in the United States, each state would have to create its own carbon tax and then implement it. And nobody will do it. Not even the liberals. Not even Washington. Washington State maybe approached it and backed off. In Canada, the prime minister, he just says, carbon tax. All you peasants and peons and subjects, you're going to pay. And that's the end of the subject. So they have a top-down form of government. We have a bottom-up form of government. That's the difference.
Okay.
All right. All right, let me ask this question. This is an important one. All right. So Canada is still part of the United Kingdom. You've got into some independence in the governance, but you're still part of the United Kingdom. So if we accept Alberta as a 51st state, or say a territory of the United States, do we have to go to war with England?
So this is a good question. So first of all, just to give some context, if you were to ask 10 Canadians, Canada a sovereign country, you literally could get 10 different answers. And in fact, one answer that a Canadian gave to me was he said, you would need a team of lawyers to figure out how to ask this question. So their system is purposefully unclear. And okay, but regarding Alberta, here's what is different between what we think of as Canada, like Ontario, the original, that part of Canada, versus the western part of Canada. So basically, the Dominion government of Canada was created, I believe, 1867, and the Queen, by an act of British Parliament, they fused four provinces into a Dominion. So you had Quebec, Ontario, and a few more, and it appears to me, I'm not a scholar, but from what I can see, it appears to me the British needed control of the St. Lawrence Seaway, and even today, that seaway supports, that river, the St. Lawrence River that goes through Quebec, supports a $6 trillion a year global economy, the third biggest economy in the world. And so the British were bringing all the wood out to build the ships for the British Navy, and they had the fur trade and all kinds of stuff going on, but they needed the waterway. And so they fused these provinces together to create a dominion. So this is like, we could say, maybe a territory. And so that belonged to Britain. It was their property. But after creating the dominion, later, the dominion government, they acted on their own. Now, back in the 1600s, the King of England, he sent in two surveyors to the Hudson Bay, which from looking at a map, I mean, I think it's a pretty big bay. He sent in two, I believe they're French surveyors, to survey the bay. They made their survey, and then the King of England, he drafted a charter, and I believe gave to his cousin, maybe his name was Rupert, I'm not sure, but gave to his cousin, this charter was a license to do business. And in this charter, it said, basically, you can do business in any area that drains into the Hudson Bay. Well, the drainage area actually includes part of Quebec, part of the United States, but not all of West, not part of Western Canada. Maybe it's some of Western Canada, but not for a large section. So this charter was used by the Hudson Bay. So basically, it's the company operating, and under the context of British law by which it was given, the owners of the charter, they had a license to do business, but they were obligated under British law to negotiate with the local governments. Well, no one had ever went inland to see who's living there or anything like that. No, actually, nobody really knew how big the drainage was because these two surveyors were just in the bay. That's all. They didn't know it went down to the U.S. They just said, whatever the drainage is, you can do business there. So it's undefined. And so later, Canada, they take the position that they made a deal with the Hudson Bay Company. Okay, so let me back up to British law. The second thing is with the charter, the business does not have power over local people. So just because they have a charter doesn't mean they automatically have power over the local people. If the local government wanted to adopt British law and implement it, they could, but they didn't have power over the local people. And so this license to do business issued in the 1600s. Well, business was still running in the 1800s, Hudson Bay Company, probably most people heard of it. And so the Dominion government of Canada, they say, oh, well, we're going to buy all this land from the Hudson Bay Company. Now, actually, the charter is just a license to do business. It's not a title. And Americans recognize that. In fact, in the state of Minnesota, the state legislature passed a resolution of protest and sent it to the U.S. Senate because the Dominion government went to Manitoba and overthrew the self-government that had been established. So you had people there who had been living peacefully. They had established a form of government. They were well-behaved. It was international people. It was Métis Indian and some French people. And they did just fine. And they were across the border from Minnesota. And the Dominion government, they say, no, we made this deal with the Hudson Bay Company. It's all ours. So the American people recognize this is wrong. So that's part of our history, too. And so the land of Western Canada, if the Hudson Bay Company never actually had a charter, then how did the Dominion government of Canada end up with this land? Well, it's simple. They made a proclamation. They sent forces, and they overthrew the self-government that had been established by the people, and they took it as theirs. It's like manifest destiny actually really did happen, but inside of Canada at the hands of the Dominion government. So the whole question is, you know, for the people in those areas who became subjugated economically, and they saw this, like Alberta, 118 years, they saw when the Canadian government, Dominion government, gave the proclamation that basically they had lost all their power and all their rights, and that all of their work now would be harnessed by the Dominion government. And also, something very similar happened in 1947, 1948, 1949, because in New Finland, 90,000 people tried to join the United States when New Finland was still the Dominion of New Finland and not part of Canada. So during World War II, under U.S. investment, the government of New Finland had four times more money, national wage had doubled, and when it came time to decide should the Dominion of New Finland be independent, Britain, should they join Confederation of Canada, or should they join the United States, 90,000 people formed a political party called the Economic Union Party and tried to join the United States. But between the British and the Canadian side, they removed the option. That's recent history. So, I mean, for part of Canada to join, let's say Alberta, it really comes down to the interpretation of the law. And so in other cases, we've seen some areas join, and join as already as a state or join as a republic. And this is another issue also, because in the United States, all 50 states have constitutions created by we the people. And a lot of people don't realize how valuable these constitutions are. Well, to become a state, Alberta would need to present a constitution made by we the people that reflects the American Constitution, and then present that to Congress. So instead of saying, oh, we are a republic, well, you actually are a republic if you have a republican form of government through a constitution. And this has happened also in history as well. But the question probably would not involve Britain at this point so much, because it seems they have wanted to stay out of anything involved with Canada since like the 1950s or 1930s. And it would be more of a question between the people and also the people of the, you know, also the Canadian government at some point too.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I was being comical with that question, because now that Queen Elizabeth has passed away, they probably have to worry about Canada and Australia breaking away. But so what is it going to take for, I mean, one, you got to convince, and you said you're working with American senators to annex Alberta as a territory before it becomes a state. What is it that you've got to do to separate yourself from Canada?
Right, okay. So first of all, I don't think that the U.S. would ever try to carry out an annexation. But the people of the region, if they appeal to the U.S. to be allowed to join, That would be a different matter. It would be coming from the people. And if you look at the case of Taiwan, the United States position is it's up to the people of Taiwan to decide what is their future. Now, the other side of the coin is separating from Canada. Okay, well, so first of all, Alberta never joined Canada. They didn't join. It was a seizure. It was a political and a military. Well, it involved forces. It was actual seizure. They had a government called the Rutherford government, and it was overthrown. So this is a question of, well, should a kidnapped person be allowed to escape from the kidnapper? Because there was no consent at all. And not just Alberta, Saskatchewan, and also Manitoba. So if we look at the whole picture, the real question should be, are these people allowed to determine their future, or do we believe that they should be allowed to determine their own future as everybody else, including the 13 colonies? If you read the Declaration of Independence, what Jefferson said was stated as universally true. He didn't say, yeah, this is for us four and no more. No. When the United States was founded through the Articles of Association, before we had the Declaration of Independence, the founders approached many British colonies, Bermuda, Jamaica, many, many British colonies in the New World, and communicated with them because to see would they join in the boycott against the British. So, you know, in the case of the U.S., we took control of our own future, but that's never happened there. So the real question is, you know, should we agree that they be able to control their own future the way that we say we believe people should be allowed to, even in Taiwan? Do we believe that for them? Is it only, yeah. So on the Canadian side, Quebec had two referendums to secede. So the Canadian Supreme Court said that, oh, yes, the province can secede. But then they made rules that amount to, yeah, the province can secede if everybody in Canada could do 200 push-ups in under 2 minutes. Yeah, we'll let you secede. So the Canadian government created the Clarity Act. And the Clarity Act sets the terms, which involve goalposts that the government can move around. So so here's the question. If the person was kidnapped, do they have a right to free themselves from the kidnapper? Or do they need to negotiate? Because they never joined Canada. That never happened.
All right. So what you're – all right. The question is, so what do we as Americans have to do? Right?
Okay,
now,
wait.
Now, you've got Albertans have a legal issue. But for – you got to figure – you know, what you're saying is that you have a legal case for never having even been a member of Canada. So that frees you up. Now, keep in mind, in America, the debate was over states' rights versus centralized control, government control. And we went to war and killed something like 300,000, you know, Yankees over that issue. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Canada. So what is it Americans would have to do to accept Alberta as the 51st state or a territory?
I want
to add something to that we have a lot of possessions, all right, as a result of the Second War, but not that the World War II. Okinawa became one of our territorial possessions, and there was a debate among Okinawans as to whether they wanted to become a state, an American state. All right. Now, one of the rules is you got to speak English. All right. So anyway, tell me, what is it that you expect from Americans for Alberta to become the 51st state?
Right. Okay. So the first thing that I think Americans should consider is what are considered to be U.S. national security interests. And so people can research that and look into it. For example, what are our national security interests with regard to energy? So Alberta has 5 times more oil than the entire United States combined. They have 5 times more. Alberta plus Texas kicks OPEC right off the map. So just in terms of national security interests, we could think of energy, or we could look back in history, or we could look at even right now. Other countries like China, they are making so many inroads into Canada, the place with a coastline of over 150,000 miles and only 40 million people down on the southern border. During World War II, the Nazis landed on the coast of Labrador and built a base nobody ever knew. So in terms of our national security interests, or in our national interests in general, I think people need to look at what would be the effect if Alberta were a state. And right now, Alberta indirectly supports in 50 states almost 1 million American jobs. So they are important to the U.S., and they also do provide a great deal of petroleum exports. And there's other parts of Western Canada, too, that probably would be benefited as well. And then the next thing is, if we need a president to recognize them even for one day and a Congress to agree to let them join and create an enabling act or to talk to Canada, then Americans, I believe, need to talk with their elected officials about this subject. As you can see, 21 states sued over the action of Keystone. So Keystone was kicked around for 13 years, and just in 5 years, in the same country, the equivalent of 10 Keystone XLs were built within the United States. But to get one across that international border in 13 years, even with the Trump campaign promise, no one could get it done. So, you know, so actually the 21 states that sued over the loss of Keystone XL, those states, they all say, yes, we need Alberta to be a state. Maybe if Alberta were a state, we would have had this Keystone more than 13 years ago. I mean, that right there should show everybody the fact that 21 states sued over the loss of Keystone XL, how important Alberta is for America. So American people can talk to their elected leaders and maybe push them, or they can research on their own or look into the things that the media never tells us about Canada to try to understand. But now it's coming to light because of the tyrannical leader they have. So, yeah, I would say that would be the start for American people. And to realize that this idea was not just for us four and no more. That's not what the founders of the United States fought for or believed in. And, yeah.
Right. So, as the historian, what I want to on your last statement is what our founding fought, not just our founding fathers didn't fight for shit. Okay, they were the leaders. But what the soldiers fought for from 1775 to 1781 was that the right of every province, colony, whatever you want to call it, has the right to decide its own future. Okay, so based on that inspiration, we are in agreement. Now, as you know, our current government is opposed. They're trying to squash fossil fuels. Okay. Just tell me in a short answer, what in terms, okay, for everybody out there who's look, under the Trump administration, we became energy, fossil fuel, energy independent. We became an exporter. What would admitting Alberta as a territory, as a state to the United States do to our status as a oil producer, fossil fuel producer?
Yeah, it would put the United States ahead of OPEC, and the saying in the energy industry, which has been related to me by leaders in Alberta, is they say down in Texas, Alberta plus Texas beats OPEC. So right there.
And Alaska, I would have to ask Alaska, because I think Alaska is a major oil producer too, right? But we have all these, we're talking about shale oils, all right? And Oklahoma has a lot of shale oils. And so now Oklahoma has become the state with the largest number of earthquakes because of that fracking, okay? All right. So you're gonna not only would we become energy independent, we would become the largest fossil fuel producer in the world, is what you're saying. More than Russia,
yes.
More than OPEC.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And instead of our leaders going and bowing down before Saudi nobility, the world could buy from North America. Because we would be ahead. We would be ahead. The Alberta plus Texas would beat OPEC. How much money are they taking? What do they do with all that money? How many times do they finagle our politics, or even worse, the politics of Canada from the outside? So, I mean, you know, I think as a national security interest, being energy independent and doing it really well with Alberta as a state would be a great thing for world peace, for keeping the money in North America, for jobs. They actually
All right. I got to play the devil's advocate. I'm going to disagree with you. I would rather go to Venezuela and get oil from them to export to Europe than get oil from Alberta.
Well, that's a moral issue.
Morality has nothing to do with it, okay?
No, I think it does. I think it does. Because look at the instability in the world and how much of it is tied to oil, and then you look at the countries involved.
No. Biden is not going to Alberta to ask for oil. Biden is going to Iran and Venezuela to ask for more oil production.
When the election comes, because we American people created six-term limits during the revolution, and we created the office of the president under the Constitution, we took this idea that had been developed in the states to limit the governors, and we used that to model the office of the president, which means when the election comes, everybody that's unhappy with these policies can give him the boot. And actually, in the United States, we can see our presidents kind of ping-pong back and forth, Republican, Democrat. So really, I think we're looking at, if the Republicans do a good job, that I'm sure we're going to have a Republican president again. So Biden has how much time left? 2 years?
Well, it could be 2 to 4 years. Generally, most presidents get a 8-year term. Okay, but here's the issue. Okay, so when you're talking to our listeners,
yes,
the big thing is, we're going like, all right, what's going to be the advantage of Ben and Alberta to our map, okay? It really is going to make the map look bad. But then again, we've got Alaska, okay? So if we can get all the provinces west of Alberta, this is going to look like a really cool map, okay? Which I think that after Alberta becomes the 51st state, the others are going to follow. All right, but here's the issue. So in this, when we elect, so the first thing Biden did as the president is to wage war on fossil fuels, cut the Keystone Pipeline. All right. So all of a sudden, oil from Canada is bad until Ukraine goes to war with Russia, and Europe is the especially Germany, is dependent on oil from Russia. So all of a sudden, we have to start producing more oil. But we are not. You see, you can never admit you made a mistake. So we're not going to say, okay, we cut the Keystone. Just tell me if I'm wrong. So I'm the president. I'm like, okay, so I said that this Keystone Pipeline of pumping oil from Canada into the United States is a bad idea. So I can never admit I made a mistake. So instead of rectifying that and saying none of us knew that Alberta had one-third of the world's oil reserves, right? All right, so we're going to say, no, we're going to go to Venezuela, which is a communist country that's destroyed its economy, and we have a flood of illegal immigrants from that country coming into it, and Iran, which we already know is a bad actor in the Middle East. We're going to, instead of going to Alberta, we're going to go to Venezuela and Iran and ask them to pump more oil for our allies.
Well,
am I
okay.
missing something?
So first of all, up in Canada, a lot of their products, and I think even the petroleum, the production is controlled by the government. So it's not just like they drill and sell some oil. It's actually, for example, the maple syrup cartel. If you're in Quebec and you make some maple syrup, by law, you have to get sell that to the cartel. It's a government-backed monopoly. And if you don't, you sell to someone else, you're going to jail because you're a bad guy. So they have a very strong government control, whether there's a pipeline or not. And actually, when Trudeau was reelected in 2019, what I was told by industrial people from Calgary is that 74% of foreign investment pulled out. So you saw the loss of their big companies like Encana went to the United States. Husky Energy went to the United States. Murphy Oil went to the United States. Many, many. And then they actually have $200 billion of canceled projects. So really, if Alberta were to join and under American rules, like under as a state, as part of the union, and the businesses started pumping money to finally develop, our economic future, the jobs, and all of that, it's probably not even imaginable. And it also would shore up the whole security issue. Don't you ever feel tired of seeing the people in the Middle East with all that money? That could be North America. Why do they have all that money? Why can they stabilize?
Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. All right. So do Albertans pay taxes, state taxes, provincial taxes?
I don't know the how
all right,
it works
the reason
out.
I ask that. The reason I ask that, because Alaskans don't. In fact, by living in Alaska, they get paid by the state because of the oil revenue.
There you go. And that's because of the state constitution. And the people, the people of Alaska embedded by referendum into the constitution their resource fund. And in Alberta, it will have so much more oil and so much more oil money. And what happened? Well, the resource fund was raided and raided and raided so that it's broken. Why? There's no constitutional
rule. So basically, the government of Canada is ripping off Albertan citizens, whereas in America, the Alaskans, who have the oil-rich country, sparsely populated, are actually getting paid to be Alaskan citizens.
Yes, yes. We have members in our group who are living in Alaska. We have members who have become American, whether they're treaty Indian and they automatically qualify or they immigrated.
Right.
And they love it. They say, oh, my taxes are so much lower. My car insurance is so much lower. Why? It's not a government monopoly.
Right,
my cell phone is so much lower. Yeah.
Wait. Yeah. You're going to tell me that a strong government cannot provide a better living standard for a citizen than just turning them loose and letting the states decide for them?
It's a disaster. British Columbia is now sending their patients to Washington State to be treated because the province's medical system is broken. It's a disaster. And they have 60,000 people.
No, you're lying to me. No, you're lying to me because the liberals tell me that Canada is the standard for public health care. You're lying to me. Don't tell me that.
You know, so first of all, it costs $8,000 per person per year. So if the family of four, that's $32,000. Okay, this week on Monday, a neighbor from Edson, Alberta, phoned me. He came to my house, and he said, Ben, I don't speak Spanish. Can you help me call the doctor? I need to make an appointment to get an x-ray. He said, I've been trying to get an x-ray in Alberta for months, but I can't see a doctor. Oh, this is a complaint everywhere. Can't see a doctor. Months. He said, can you call this number and help me make this appointment? Sure. So I speak kind of, you know, meager Spanish. So I called the lady, receptionist, and I told her, I said, yeah, my friend, he needs to make an appointment to get x-ray. She said, you don't need an appointment. You can come in any time from 8:30 in the morning till 12:30. We'll do the x-ray. We'll have the results ready by 4:30 in the afternoon. One day, no appointment.
And no, Alberta, you're lying to me. You're lying to me. Because I heard Bernie Sanders say this. I've heard Biden say this. You're lying to me.
No, there's stuff would be criminally illegal in the United States. Why? Okay, someone has a problem that needs to be treated, and they make them wait for 6 months, and they're in pain, right? So they put them on high-power painkiller for 6 months. An American nurse told me, she said, I work with all these Canadian nurses, and when I hear this, I can't believe it, because in the U.S., that would be criminal, because you're going to turn the person into a drug addict. So how come they can't be seen or treated for 6 months? And this is not only Alberta. I've heard it from people from Ontario, British Columbia, really many parts of Canada. And so this whole notion of free health care, it's a lie. First, it's not free. And then if they stay out of their country for more than 180 days, they'll say, oh, I need to return to my country, or I'll lose my free health care. So now they're a prisoner of the government's criminal medical treatment of people. And people who are maimed or injured, or they're allowed to heal in a way that can never wrongly, and it can't be fixed later, do you think they can sue for malpractice? No. I talked to a guy from Ontario. He said he was in court for 10 to 12 years, and he won like $10,000 by the end. He was coming out of an operation, and he heard the doctor say that he had left something inside, and he heard it. When he confronted the doctor, the doctor said, well, I'm not required by law to tell you, but he had already heard it. And he needed two more surgeries, which ended up botched, to remove what was left inside. 10 or 12 years in court, he told the judge, I should have walked around and collected coins. So they don't really have a strong accountability. It's crazy. Like, we would not allow this in the U.S. We would not allow these outcomes.
Well, I will tell you, the liberals
except maybe in the VA,
a healthcare system like that. All right, we don't have a lot of time, James. How do you want to wrap up the show?
I asked James if I could have a couple of minutes at the end, and
I want to give the remaining time to Father Michael. And also, I want to say a big thank you to Greg and Benjamin for coming on the show. And you know, you're just wonderful guys. We love the Patriot Liberty movement, and we support you. So, Father Michael, you've got the show from here to the end.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We have some exciting occurrences that have taken place in our church. We have acquired a new facility. In a miraculous fashion, but we have to build it out, and there's a lot of things that we have to do. And I just wanted to put our website out for the listeners who've been listening to me over the years, and if it would be in your heart to want to donate and help us in any way, I just would like to give our website. It's St. Michael and All Angels, but the website is www, and as James said earlier, I'll read it out, SaintMichaelsCEC.org. Okay, I want to read it again, SaintMichaelsCEC.org. O-R-G. And that'll give you an idea of who I am, what our denomination is. And we're really excited. We have some real good things that are progressing. And I would like people to be a part of it in prayer, as well as if you would want to contribute for our build-out, we would appreciate it a great deal. I'd like to offer a prayer. We talked about a lot of things, a lot of concerns. It's interesting when we talk about independence. You know, we all have this deep-bedded desire to be free, to have freedom. And I often think of the Apostle Paul, who was freer than some people when he was in prison because of his relationship with the Lord and his purpose in life. And so we all have to have a noble purpose to be a part of and to be a part of the solution, as Greg mentioned earlier, and not the part of the problem. So, again, I want to thank everyone for all your support and the way you've been faithful followers. And we want to meet your needs, but sometimes we have needs as well. So let me please pray for the audience before James closes us out. Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for the good discussion and the burdens and concerns of other people that we can share with them. And I thank you for our guests today, Benjamin and Greg. And I thank you for the discussion that we had. Help us to reach people for the good, Lord God. For the good, Lord. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. James?
All right. That was a beautiful prayer, Father Michael. And for all of our guests out there, Greg, I just want to tell you and Benjamin again how honored we are to have you on the show. We also want to do a big shout out to all you listeners that are out there, especially the new listeners that have started to listen in. And, you know, when you talk about freedom, and a lot of people take freedom for granted, a lot of people take you know, we had a good time having the discussion tonight. And as Rich always plays what we call the devil's advocate, and some of the questions that he had and his responses, you know, as it relates to big government and the things that occur with a big government in control, is very realistic. What we're running into and seeing here is a large overreach that has affected an extremely large population who is standing up saying, you know, it's time for us to move forward and do something else. Now, my most humble and sincere prayer is that they can do it peacefully, that it will be a peaceful transition into America as the 51st state. The same thing that is going on in New York, California, Washington, all of these things are being driven by socialist and almost communist-styled movements, even in our own states in America. Some of the state governments have become just as oppressive as the federal government, and we notice that we find this mostly occurring in those states and those areas that genuinely vote blue or Democrat. And when you look at what they have done to the party of the Democrat Party, the party of JFK, the party of FDR, I think that it's safe to assume that it's definitely not the party of JFK anymore. And it is time for people to make a change. Let us pray for peaceful transition as well. But let us also pray that they give them the strength and the courage to continue your fight. Greg and Benjamin, we appreciate your service and your efforts in this wonderful movement to bring freedom to Alberta by allowing them to enter the United States of America. And to all of you that are out there fighting the good, standing up for freedom, standing up for liberty, standing up, defending the oppressed, we salute you as well. You are what makes America truly great. God bless you, folks. We thank you for listening in to Continue Mission, and we ask that you join us again next week on Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the next episode of Continue Mission. God bless, and have a wonderful weekend, folks. Remember, folks, 4th of July.
4th of July. Amen.
Don't forget to celebrate it. It's a wonderful time, and it looks like the 1st of July is going to be the Independence Day for Alberta. So God bless you, and God bless America, and good night, everybody.
Good night.